I am, let's go to share screen. Okay.
Awesome.
Okay, Phyllis is here and I see Adina is logged in.
Okay. Not easily this morning.
No?
Internet trouble? It didn't want to work.
Right. I can totally relate.
What?
I can totally relate.
Thank you. I really appreciate that.
First flurries of the season. It messes up the internet. Entirely possible. Okay. We're going to jump right in. I'm going to put everybody on a temporary mute, leave you all the option to unmute at will. Just be easier to keep your focus. All right. So please make sure you know how to unmute at your end if you want to chime in, join the conversation, ask a question, or otherwise interrupt for any reason. We are going to begin. So we were in the midst of a discussion, and I apologize for last week. We kind of had a week break because of some scheduling conflicts, but we are back on schedule. We were in the midst of discussing this perek in which David is told, Perek Zion, that he makes the request after many, many years of anticipation, makes the request to build the Beit HaMikdash. I'm sitting in a house of cedar. The ark, the temple, the tabernacle is sitting in a tent. Makes the request to build a mikdash. And we know that the mikdash really was David's dream for really I don't know for sure at what point he sort of sets his sights on building the mikdash. But we do know that for David, it is a dream of many years. Actually, it was not something I was going to look at right now, but I'm going to show it to you anyway. If you look at, there's a perek in Tehillim, which is Tehillim, where's Tehillim, there it is, Kuf Lamed Bet, I believe. Shir Ma'alot Zachor Hashem LeDavid Et Kol Unoto. To remember David's years of affliction. What was his affliction? What pained David for many years? Asher Nishba LaHashem Nadar Lavi Yaakov. David, who had taken an oath to God, who had taken a vow. Im Avo Bo'oel Beiti Imale Al Eres Yitzu'ai. If I come to my tent to sleep, if I allow sleep to come upon my eyes, if I allow sleep to my eyes or slumber to my eyelids, ad emtza makom lahashem mishkanot lavir Yaakov, until I find a place for God, a dwelling place for the mighty of Yaakov, hinesh manua be'efrata mitzanua b'steya'ar. Behold, we heard in Ephrat, we heard in the fields of the forests, Navo lemishkanotav nishtachave laadom raglav. We go to his high place, let us worship at his footstool. We'll talk about this phrase, footstool, in a moment, clearly a reference to the Mikdash. Kuma Hashem lemenuchatecha, ata v'aron uzecha, come, arise, God, to your resting place, the ark of your strength. Your priests be clothed for righteousness. The pious ones shall shout for joy. So this oath that David takes is an oath that God, that he will spend his whole life searching for and not resting until he finds that place in which to place the ark, to place the throne, to create the permanent resting place for the temple, nishtachave l'adom raglav, to go and to bow down to his high place, to his footstool, in his mikdash. And then the end of this perek, we'll look at when we look at the end of our perek, because there's a connection there as well. Nishba Hashem le David, the oath that God swore to David. But clearly, ki bachar Hashem b'tzion, ivala moshavlo, God chose Tzion, desired it for his inhabitants, the inhabitation. Right? This is a reference to the Mikdash and what it meant. So David had taken this oath that he will not rest and not sleep, essentially, until, kind of a or a metaphorical sense, until he finds that place, until he can build the temple. So this was not just a casual comment of David, it's time to build the temple. This was really a lifelong dream of his, certainly from the time that he had ascended to the throne, to establish a place that would become a permanent place for the Mikdash, the Mishkan, which is sitting in a tent, the Mishkan, the Aron, which is sitting in a tent. He felt that it was inappropriate and it was time to build the temple. So this perek really reflects the emotional investment that David had in this moment when he comes to Natan and he says, Anochi yoshev bevet arazim v'aron elokim yoshev betoch ha'iriyah. God's temple is sitting in a tent and I'm sitting in a palace. And Natan had responded initially by saying, Kol asher b'levavcha aseh, do it, do as you feel is right, Ki Hashem imach, God is with you, which is a way of saying yes. And unfortunately for David, that was quickly rescinded. Vayi balayla ahu, vayi dvar Hashem Natan lemor. Lech v'yamarta l'avdi el David, koma Hashem, ha'atat ibne li bayit l'shifti. God said to David, are you going to build a house for me to dwell in? And the rest of this parak we have explored various ways. We're going to delve into it at this time. So last class, we looked at not so much what this parak says, but what the parak doesn't say. Meaning we focused our attention on the conversation that we find in Divrei Hayamim, in which David, in hindsight, looks back and he says, the reason I was refused the opportunity to build the Mikdash was because Dam Larov Shafachta, because I had too much blood on my hands. The Mikdash is a place of peace. Shalu shalom Yerushalayim v'shayu go avayich, place of shalom Yerushalayim, place of Yerushalayim is a place of peace, that could not be built by a man of war. That was David's perspective, and whether he heard it in Natan's nevuah, or he was kind of his own assessment of why he was denied, clearly that reference to the wars that David fought is not in this parah. And so our attention now shifts to what actually is in this parak. What is the reasons that are given by God to David through the Navi as to the refusal to allow him to build the Mikdash at this time? So whereas in Divrei Hayamim, the answer to the question was not David, in Shmuel Bet Perak Zayin, the answer seems to be much more focused on not now. And the timing seems to be the primary issue that is addressed. So let's take a look in more depth at what God's answer to David was. And whether there's more than one answer, because I think there probably is more than one. Ki lo yashavti bevayit l'miyom ha'aloti et bnei Yisrael mimitzrayim v'yad hayom hazeh. I have not dwelt in a house, a permanent place. Remember the difference between a bayit and an ohel is that a bayit is permanent, fixed, and an ohel is by definition, you pitch a tent here, you pitch a tent there. So the definition, the Mishkan is a portable, temporary location, can be temporary for 369 years as it was in Shiloh, but it is still by definition temporary, movable, that's why it's called an ohel, whereas a bayit is, despite what you see in the news every once in a while about them jacking up a house and moving it on stilts or whatever it is, but generally speaking, a house is considered permanent. Ki lo yashavti bevayit l'miyom ha'aloti et bnei Yisrael mimitzrayim v'yad hayom hazeh, v'yeh mitalech ba'ohel uv'mishkan. I, God says, have placed my presence in a tent, a tabernacle. B'chol asher italachti b'chol b'nei Yisrael, in all of the places that I journeyed amongst b'nei Yisrael, hadavarti barti et achat shiftei Yisrael asher tziviti l'ra'ot et ami et Yisrael lemor, have I spoken even once to any of the shoftim, to the leaders of Israel, the judges, who are commanded to lead my people, saying to them, Lama lo v'nitem li beit arazim? Why didn't you build for me a house? Yatakot amar l'avdil li David, ko amar Hashem tzva'ot, ani l'kachticha min anaveh, I took you, David, from the sheepcote, I took you from the role as a shepherd, me'achar atzon, I'm following the sheep, and I made you my prince of Israel, liot nagid al ami al Yisrael. Ve'yeimcha, I have been with you, b'chol asher alachta, and everything you have done, ve'achrit et kol oivecha mipanecha, I've removed, cut off all your enemies from before you, ve'asiti lecha shem gadol kishem ha'gdolim asher ba'aretz, and I will make your name great like the name of the great ones on earth. Samti makom la'ami li'Yisrael, I will appoint a special place for my people Israel, unita'ativ, I will plant them there, v'shachan tachtav, they will dwell there, v'lo yirgaz od, they will not be disquieted anymore, v'lo yosifu b'nei avla la'anoto ka'asher barishona, the wicked ones will not afflict them anymore as they had done at first, and ulemina yoma shetziviti shoftim alami Yisrael, and from the days that I commanded judges over Israel, the wicked ones who were afflicting you, they will no longer do so. But rather, anichoti lecha mikol evecha. Rather, I will give you rest from all of your enemies. Migid lecha Hashem, ki bayit yaseh lecha Hashem. And I will, moreover, God says to you, God will make a house for you. Ki imlu yamecha. Shechavtat abotecha, your days are filled, and you shall rest with your fathers. V'akimoti et zaracha acharecha sheyetzei mimeecha, I will set up your seed after you that shall come from you. V'achinoti et mamlachto, I will establish his kingdom. Hui yivne bayit lishmi, this child whom you shall have, who shall sit on your throne, he shall build the house for me. I will establish his throne for eternity. I'll be for him a father, he'll be for me a son. I may punish him, I may chastise him, but I may even punish him with nigaim, with affliction. But my mercy, my love, my choice shall not depart from him as it had departed from Shaul. V'neman beitcha u'mamlachtecha adolam lefanecha, your house, your kingdom shall be made eternal before you. Kisacha yenachon adolam, your throne shall be established forever. Kechol advarim ha'ele, kechol ha'chizayon hazeh, ken diber el Natan el David. And according to these words, did Natan speak to David? Okay, so clearly it's a little bit of a jumble of a lot of different themes. A coherent, structured message is hard to find in this conversation. Jumps from discussion about I don't need a house, I never requested a house, to I'm gonna give you peace from all your enemies, and I'm going to give you an heir to the throne. I'm going to give you a child who'll sit on your throne. He'll build me the house. I'll build you a house. There's a lot of different themes playing out in this parak. So what I thought we would do is to try to understand what's going on, is to actually break it down. Rather than looking at the whole piece, to break it down to the individual messages that Natan gives to David, there are several. And if we break it down and try to understand what each one represents, means, then I think we can pull together the themes that connect them all and through that way create or find a holistic message in the request. So I'd have to go on to start from the towards the middle. Pasuk Yud and Yud Aleph. Samti makom la'ami li'Yisrael unitati v'shechan tachtav v'lo yigaz od v'lo yosifu b'nei avla la'anoto ka'asher b'rishana l'min hayom asher tziviti shoftim al'ami Yisrael. I will appoint a place for my people Israel. I will plant them. They will dwell in their place. They will no longer be disquieted. They will, the enemies, the children of wickedness shall no longer afflict them as they had done earlier from the days that I appointed Shoftim to lead my people Israel, fought all the wars. I will give you rest from all of your enemies. And then we'll come back to that phrase in a second. This phrase, really from here to here. So first of all, just as an aside, and as a pure grammatical comment, not really substantive, just an observation. I think I've mentioned before that when you look at Tanakh, sometimes you have to realize that sentence structure, grammatical sentence structure that we are used to doesn't exactly match the psukim structure of Tanakh. I don't know exactly where this kind of mistaken notion comes from, but we often refer to psukim as sentences. And we sort of in our minds correlate a pasuk and a grammatical construct called a sentence. That is a faulty correlation. We know that there are psukim that are half sentences, and we know that there are sentences that fit into half a pasuk. Most famous of all, pasuk in the Torah that appears more than any other is half a sentence, is Vayedaber Hashem al Moshe Lemor. God spoke to Moshe saying thus, comma. Open quotation marks. Okay, that's not a sentence. That's a phrase. The rest of the sentence is the next pasuk, whatever comes next. Nor do psukim end at the end of a, nor do sentences necessarily have to end at the end of a pasuk. Sentences can end in the middle of a pasuk. And so sometimes you have to pull the context out and understand what's going on. Here's a very good example. This phrase, Lumina yom asher tziviti shoftim al ami al Yisrael, from the day I commanded judges of my people Israel, and I will give you rest from all your enemies. If I looked at that as a sentence, it would make no sense whatsoever. But I have to look at this as two psukim with two sentences that overlap, actually three sentences that overlap. I will appoint a place for my people Israel. I will establish them there. I will give them peace. There will no longer be enemies who will trouble them. B'nei Avla will not continue to afflict them. Kasher barishona, as they did in earlier times, and from the time that I commanded Shoftim over Israel. Period.
Can I ask you a question?
You may.
If I mean, all these psukim together, wouldn't that make David feel wonderful? He's going to be taken care of. Everybody loves him. I mean, it seems to me if he heard these words, why wouldn't he just say, aha, somebody's going to take care of me?
Okay. So David's reaction to it, we'll see at the end. We got a long way to go before we get to David's reaction to it. But yeah, I don't think David wasn't upset by it. I think he was in many ways surprised maybe, or David's reaction is a separate discussion. The end of the parak deals with David's reaction. So we'll get to back to that.
Can I just say something while we're talking about that?
Sure.
I think this whole thing is an appeasement to David. That David had this great idea of what he wanted to do, and he doesn't get to do it, but let's build him up on the other side so he doesn't feel resentful or bad or whatever that he's not getting to do what he wants to do.
Maybe. Again, the question becomes, why did Natan say yes initially? Right. So that comes back to the question of whether or not there was ever a point in time where David was anticipated or expected to build the temple that has now been taken away from him, or was it never expected? Like that's part of the question. But we'll come back to that in a moment.
Rabbi, my writing teacher would have had some real problems with the way this narrative is constructed.
Correct. That's my point, is that it's not only here, it's all through Tanakh, because we make one fundamental mistake, and that's assuming that a pasuk corresponds to a sentence. It doesn't. The psukim are arbitrary to some extent. They're part of the Masoret, but they don't necessarily correspond to a grammatical structure. So you have to pull the grammatical structure. Remember, in a Tanakh, there are no vowels and there are no periods and syntax, and there are no psukim. And the psukim is part of a Masoret of Torah Shebaal Peh. So how you divide a psukim really is separate from the sentence structure of and so sometimes it can confuse us.
But I thought the notes sort of help you break up the...
They do. The notes are very helpful, but again, they're not necessarily a correlation to a sentence in the classic sense of the term.
Okay.
Because you can have more than one sentence in one puzzle. Or
I thought the sentence structure, the book and chapter structure was put in by non-Jews.
Chapter structure, yes. Psukim, no.
Oh, okay.
The psukim are part of the Masoret of Torah Shebaal Peh. The chapter division, not the numbering of the psukim, but the division, the stop, the where does each pasuk start and stop, that's part of a Masoret of Torah Shebaal Peh. The prakim were invented later. All right. So coming back to this message, this is in itself one of the reasons why David is told he's not going to be able to build the temple, because we're not yet at the point in time where Hanichoti lecha mikol evecha, I will give you rest from all your enemies. And therefore, we have a ways to go. In this phrase, v'samti makom, if you look at Rashi, I'm just going to pull up the source page for a second. V'samti makom. Od ani chafetz lahashkit sheyehe sheket v'shalyo atami b'imei benecha. I still desire to bring more peace and quiet and tranquility for my people in the days of your son. So that is the context here. God says to David, we're not there yet. We still have to bring rest from all of your enemies and bring peace to the land of Israel. The problem I have with this phrase and with this particular message, right? It's two psukim. We'll deal with this in a small contained space. The problem I have with these two psukim and the message they contain, which is essentially, we can't build the temple during a time of conflict and war. We have to wait until we have rest and victory over our enemies. Right? Is that it seems to challenge the foundation of the introduction of the perek. We looked at this perek initially. We said that the reason for the context right now that David said, oh, this is the time to build the temple, is Vashem eniach lo misaviv mikol oivav. That God had brought about a time when he had rest from all of his enemies around him. And so he says to Natan, and yet here we're coming along and saying that God's answer is, there will come a time when my people will be established and there will not be iniquity. The b'nei avla, the children of wickedness, will not afflict them as they had done in the past. And I will give you rest from your enemies. Well, wait a second. That's how we started. We started with v'ashem iniach lo mikol oivav misaviv, right? And God had given him rest from all of his enemies. And now God is saying, can't build the temple because I have to give you a time of peace from all of your enemies. That's circular reason. That's exactly where we started. So this is one piece of the story, right? What exactly is God trying to convey that David is that is different from the way this parak begins. Hashem iniach lo misaviv mikol oivav. I think the answer here lies in a very subtle comparison between what David had achieved and what the Torah describes as a prerequisite for the building of the temple. Go back to the Psukim in Devarim, which I have here. This is the introduction to our parak. V'Hashem iniach lo misaviv mikol oivav. God had given him rest from amongst, from all his enemies surrounding him. But if you look at Devarim, these are the psukim we read a couple of weeks ago, and you will come into the land, you'll cross over the Yarden, God will give you rest from all of your enemies surrounding you. That's exactly the same phrase. But in the Torah, there's an additional two words. Vishavtem betach. You will dwell securely. Now, you could argue that Vishavtem Betach, the sense of dwelling security, is a synonym for God will give you rest from all of your enemies. They mean the same thing. God will give you rest from all of your enemies. I'm just going to... Sorry, I've got the sun in my eyes.
So, Rabbi, is there an inference of like forever?
So we're going to come to that in a second. But it's certainly, right, on the face of it, they mean the same thing, and we took them to mean the same thing initially. That this is a moment where David saw fulfilled the prerequisite conditions that the Torah sets out, even in the same language. V'Hashem iniach lo misaviv mikol oivav, v'iniach lachem mikol oivecha misaviv v'yishavtem betach. In David's language, in the Perek, it says, I will give you rest from all your enemies. In three different places, the same phrase is used. However, this phrase, Vishavtem Betach, takes on an additional connotation. And if you look at the way Shlomo, David's son, right, so now we're jumping forward back again to Perek Hay of Malachim Aleph, where Shlomo actually builds the temple. The context, the introduction there, begins with Vayeshev Yudav Yisrael Lavetach. Begins not the way David's Perek begins, with that God had given him rest from all of his enemies, but with the description of Vayeshev Yudav Yisrael Lavetach, Judah and Israel dwelt securely, each tachat gafno v'tachat te'inato, each man under his fig tree, under his vine, midan v'ad b'sheva koyim e'shlomo, from Dan to b'sheva, all the days of Shlomo Melech. V'ata, now it goes on to the phrase that we are dealing with, v'ata niach Hashem alokai li misaviv, God has given me rest from all of my enemies. Ein satan, v'ein pegara, there is no enemy, there is no affliction, there is no threat on their doorsteps, right? That corresponds to the phrase that David is describing. Hashem iniach lo mikol oivav misaviv. But this introductory phrase, Vayeshev Yisrael Levetach, Ish tachat gafno ve'ish tachat teinato, that's a phrase that doesn't appear in our parak. It says God gave him rest from his enemies, but it doesn't say v'yeshivu b'betach, that they dwelt securely. This description of ish tachat gafno v'tachat te'inato, right? That's a much more poetic, elaborate, broad stroke description of a time of peace and tranquility, right? If you can imagine for a moment, what's the difference between a time where it says that God gave David successful rest from all of his wars, versus a time described as an Israel dwelt securely, v'yeshvu betach. What's the...
It means they're much more secure. Everything's so quiet. You're living in nirvana here.
Something certainly is more substantial, right? There's something more significant, something more substantial. Imagine for a moment the difference between a generation in which you fight 12 wars against 12 enemies all around, and are victorious over each one of them. Okay. At that moment, have you accomplished peace treaties or around with all of your enemies? Yes. But are you dwelling at a time of peace and security in a kind of a peaceful era? No.
No.
Right? Whereas the next generation, born into a time of peace, they're in a position where they're living vayeshvu betach. They're living securely because they're living at a time of peace. And that's the fundamental difference. David had to fight the wars. Shlomo HaMelech got to inherit a kingdom at peace. So David was victorious. He accomplished all of that. But Shlomo HaMelech was born into a peace, into a peaceful era. And there's a profound difference between them.
Rabbi, what about internal peace and external peace?
So in the context of the building of the Mikdash, that's less of a reference. The reference here is to establish peace from without. There is a certain assumption, I mean, if you're talking about internal peace in terms of machloket, kind of doesn't yet become a relevant factor. It will. But at this point, the assumption is if you bring the people together and you fight your enemies and you establish peace, then the next generation born into that era is not without its challenges, but they're born into a time of peace. Right? And that's if you look, there's a subtle reference here. If you look at Melachim Aleph Perek Hey, where it describes each one living under his fig tree and under his vine. We talked about that phrase a couple of weeks ago when we talked about the danger of peace and why it's so important to establish the mikdash, to establish the temple dafka once you achieve peace. Because then that's the recipe, that's the moment where the danger of each tribe or group within the nation kind of splintering off into a kind of isolated and independent existence rather than seeing themselves united as one people serving one God. And so that's necessary at Dafka at this moment when you kind of feel this each man under his vine, under his fig tree kind of prophecy. That's when you have to bring them together in a single focused entity of spirit of Avodas Hashem. That's what the Mikdash is for. But there's coming back to the phraseology, Hashem iniach lamisaviv mikol eivav is true. God, David had fought his wars and he had been victorious. It's not true, however, that David had finished all his wars. There's still a few more to go. But even if there weren't, it's not true that the era of David was an era of peace. The era of David was an era of victories over his enemies. The era of Shlomo was a kingdom that he inherited, which was a kingdom at peace. And there's a profound difference between them. Same language, additional two words. Vishavtem betach. Ein satan v'ein pegara. And then I think if I come back to the nevuah to David, that I think ultimately is what these two psukim mean. You may have achieved peace in the sense that you may have achieved victory, let's call it. But to take my people Israel, plant them, establish them, to the point of v'lo yirgaz od, they shall no longer be disquieted. Lo yosifu b'nei avlal ha'anoto. Children of wickedness shall no longer afflict them as they had done from the days of the Shoftim. Because anichoti lecham mikol evecha, because I've given you respite from all your enemies. All of this is true. And now you need to be, the Mikdash can be built, but as a kind of a crowning moment of that era of peace. Begid lecha Hashem, and now your son born into that era will build a temple. So it's it's a subtle difference, but it jumps from the world of David to the world of the next generation. That's why I said earlier that it's about not now. Not about not in this parak. It's not about not you. It's about not now. You've achieved victory. Shlomo will be born into a period of peace. And that's a significant difference. I just got to take care of the sun is right in my eyes, so we're going to do that.
I have a question on a grammatical question on the verb forms, like visumti. So it looks like past, but it's not. It's future. So is that a biblical grammatical tense?
Yes. We not talked about the reversal vav, the vav ha'ipuch?
Oh, is that what it is?
Yes. All verb forms in Tanakh come in two forms. The traditional classic verb form is an opposite tense with a reversal vav. What we often make the mistake of doing is translating that vav. So visamti, samti means I placed, visamti means I will place. Yidaber, he will speak, vayidaber Hashem Moshe, God spoke. All verb forms in Tanakh work off the same structure.
Thanks, I remember that. Okay.
It has one caveat. And the caveat is typically it's a vav with a patach underneath it, vayidaber, vayomer, and a dagesh in the next letter, in the first letter of the vowel, of the verb. And that's usually the call, the tell. In this case, it's harder to see because there are certain grammatical forms that change those, so it's not a vav with a patach, it's a vav with a shva, so it comes a little harder to see, but that is in fact the case, okay? Here, this is another one. V'higid lecha Hashem. Higid, he told. V'higid, he will tell. You have to be careful throughout this whole parak, what's past tense and what's future tense. The vav reverse. Now, there are times when the Tanakh will use what we would call the past tense, or the simple past tense. That has to do with the use of past perfect. We've talked about that various times. We'll leave that for another discussion. Okay, so that's part one. Part one is David says it's a time of peace. I've achieved victory over all my enemies. God says to him, yes, you've achieved victory. It's not yet a time of peace. Yishavtem betach is not the same as v'niach Hashem lecha mikol ayvecha misaviv. You have to achieve v'niach lecha mikol ayvecha, victory of your enemies, and then you can raise a generation born into v'yishavtem betach, born into a time of living securely. That's stability. And that's a word I'm going to come back to several times. Right, that's stability in terms of security and military stability. That is necessary as a prerequisite to build the Mikdash. Message number one. However, it's not the only message in this parak, clearly. So if we go back a few psukim, I'm doing them out of order, but I'm doing them out of order intentionally. Go back a few psukim to Pasuk Chet. Remember, there's starting with Pasuk Chet. V'ata kot amar le'avdi le'David. Thus you shall say to David, Kot amar Hashem tzvakot, ani lekachticha min ha'naveh, mi'achar atzon. I took you out from amongst the sheep. A shepherd, role as a shepherd amongst your flock. Liot nagid al ami al Yisrael, to be my prince over Israel. Ve'yeimcha. There's another, you can see the reversal, Phyllis, the verb reversals, right? That's classic. Ve'yeimcha, I have been with you. B'chol asher alachta, and all that you have done. Ve'achritat kol ayvecha mipanecha, I have destroyed your enemies before you. Ve'asiti lecha shem gadol k'shem hagdolim asher ba'aretz. I will make your name great as I like the name of the great ones on the earth. What is this about? I took you out of the sheepfold. I took you out of the role of a shepherd. I brought you to my people. I made you my prince. I made you my leader. I made your name great. You've accomplished and achieved, and you've destroyed your enemies and have been a great warrior and arose to a great kingdom. I will make your name great. Sort of reminiscent of the promise God made to Abraham. Your name will be like one of the great ones of the earth. What is that message? Somebody used the word appeasement earlier, right? Is that appeasement to the, how is this relevant to the message of not now? If you look at the...
Does it mean that David HaMelech hasn't finished all his tafkidim?
Right, yeah, I think so. I think what's being reflected here is an additional message. That's not just an introduction to the next one, but really a message into itself. If you look at the Rabag certainly saw this in this way. We're going to give it a slightly different twist. The Rabag says, "Me'achazeh ba'u dvar Hashem al yad Natan Navi she'ein ve'ui lo livnot labayit l'shem yitbarach." Then in Pasuk Dalet, afterwards came this message to David, that he's not the one to build the temple. God had always placed his Shechina in a Mishkan. He had never once commanded any of the Shoftim to build a temple. That's the early Psukim. And now come to our Psukim, Chet and Yud, Chet and Tet. V'yata, Dai le David. It is sufficient. It should be sufficient for David. The fact that God took him out from amongst the sheepfolds to be the leader of Israel. And God was with him in everything he did. And he destroyed his enemies. He made him his great name as amongst the greats of the land. Hashemarad Larov, Hatzlachato, his great success, Varov Amidato, Amidat Malchuto, and the great power and wealth of his kingdom. The Sam al Yadom Makom Minuchali Israel, he gave him a place of peace and tranquility in Israel. Velot Sarol Yisrael Sonehem, and the enemies are no longer a threat to them, Kamosha Subarishanabi Mea Shoftim. And Yechlo Hashem Yikoleva, Yigidlo, Ki Hashem Kibait Yaselo. God further told him, the continuation of the parak we'll see in a little bit, that he will build for him a house, a dynasty. He'll have a permanent kingdom. And with all of these promises, here's the punchline. David, be satisfied with what you have. Be satisfied with what you have. Why should you ask for more? You want to build a Beit HaMikdash too? Right? I've given you so much. I have yet to give you so much. One person can't have it all. So I gave you what your blessing and what your portion is. And as far as the Beit HaMikdash, his son will build the Beit HaMikdash. We're going to divide the wealth here. David, be satisfied with what you have. Ezu Ashir Samech B'chalko. You'll be satisfied. I will make your name great amongst the great ones of the land. That's not enough for you? That's the way the Rabag sees these psukim.
It seems a little bit repetitive of
emotion. It seems to be what? I'm sorry, I missed that. What was that comment?
Repetitive of Moshe's situation, where he wants to come into
the land. Yeah, very much. I think there is a lot of parallels between Moshe's request to come into the land of Israel and David's request to build the Beit HaMikdash, both refused at the last minute, both sort of their life's ambitions denied them for different reasons. But I think that there is a element. In Moshe's case, it was a chet.
Well, in this case, it was the same kind of thing.
Well, we don't necessarily know that it's a chet. What's the
well, chet? But he it was the wars.
Well, that again, didn't...
I feel like both of them were sincere. Hang on a second, Janet.
Adina, you have to separate. In this parak, there's no reference to the wars. The notion that David was denied because of his actions as a warrior is not in this nevuah. David's interpretation of it years later, in hindsight, David says it. But that's not the message of the Navi. That's what we established 2 weeks ago, and it's very important. Nowhere does the Navi say to David, the reason you can't build the temple is because you have blood on your hands, because you fought wars. Doesn't say that. And that's exactly our problem, is that it says other things. So we have to figure out what it says. It says, number one, that we need to establish the land of Israel not just as a time of peace in terms of peace treaties, but a time of peace and tranquility in terms of the rank and file of Klal Yisrael. That's going to take another generation. And here, another message that God gives to David is, I've done so much for you, and I will continue to do so much for you. Right? But how in and of itself is that a message as to why he can't build the temple? I've done so much for you, and I'm going to continue to make you great, and you establish your name. Why is that in and of itself? The Rabag says that it's because he's got enough, right? He should be thankful for the blessings that he has. But I think there's more to it. I agree that there's a message here that reflects a reason for why God says to him, you can't build the temple, but I think it's more specific, right? What is it about David's life himself, right? This is very personal. I took you, this is not about my people. Right? Pasuk Yud starts about the situation of Israel. Something makom la'amil li'Yisrael. I need to establish stability in the peace of Israel. That's Pasuk Yud and Yud Aleph. Chet and Tet is not about Am Yisrael. It's about David. It's very personal. I took you from amongst the flock. I made you my prince. I made you the leader of my people. I made you victorious over your enemies. And I will make you great name, like the great ones of the earth. And therefore, well, how does that Shtim, how does that connect to the denial to build the Mikdash?
But he's not worthy to build the Mesa Mikdash. That's the whole point.
Where does it say here that he's not worthy? Again, we're working
well,
off. I should have probably not even done that paragraph. I have to separate Divrei Hayamim. Forget you ever read Divrei Hayamim. Where does it say here he's not worthy?
It doesn't.
On the contrary, it says, I have greatness destined for you.
And I did the same thing with the chet. It's because we shouldn't have read that, right?
Right. Okay, so we're going to park the chet off to the side. No chet. We're just saying to David, there's no reason to not to build the temple other than we're not ready. Not yet. I still have to establish a period of peace for my people. And I have to establish you, your greatness. You're not there yet. You will be, but you're not there yet. Why not? And here I think that we have a clue as to one of the big pieces in the story, which is we need stability in the world of the political structure, or it's not political structure, it's called the military status of Israel, peace and security. We need stability in that regard, part one. Part two, David, take a look at your life. You know what else I need in your life, David? I need greatness. I need greatness. I need substance. I need stability. I need your reputation to establish the reputation of the kingdom of Israel. In other words, David in his own right, he's a young king. He's just assumed the throne. He's just fought some of his major battles against the Plishtim. He's just conquered Yerushalayim. He's just begun an alliance with the political powers around him, Hiram Melech Tzor in particular. But David has a long way to go before he will be the great empire that he eventually will become. Now, he will become one of the greatest empires at that time, primarily because of two major battles that are still yet to be fought in Perek Chet and Perek Tet. That for all intents and purposes will qualify as world wars, uniting kingdoms and armies from across the entire region. What David has fought up until this point has been skirmishes in comparison to what is yet to come. Right, the Plishtim are tip of the iceberg.
But even though that's the case, he's already being let down because he knows he can't build the Beis HaMikdash. He's correct. Already being let down right here.
Again, we're going to look at it as a letdown. I'm going to look at it as a reference to the fact that it's too early. Right, we're not there yet. I can't build the temple until we establish not just a kingdom in Yerushalayim, a capital in Yerushalayim that is it's not just about building a capital in Yerushalayim and fighting the war against the Plish. Can you all hear me?
Yeah.
Right.
Yes.
Yeah, okay. It's not about fighting wars against the Plishtim and building a capital in Yerushalayim. It's about establishing an empire. We need to. David is not a small king. He has to be a great king. He has to be a power. This kingdom, it's not just about David. It's about David's kingdom. It's about Malchut David. Has to be in a position where they build a temple that the entire world is going to look at. And it's not just about a local tribal center of Avodas Hashem amongst the, because you happen to be victorious against the Plishtim or against Ammon and Moab. David, you have to put this in perspective. You're here. I took you out of the world of a shepherd. I built you up. You had a hard life until this point. You've just assumed the throne. How many years are we talking about? 8, 9, 10 years out of 40. Okay? He's conquered Yerushalayim. He's built his capital. He's moved the Aron. He has fought the wars against the Plishtim. He's established a political alliance with an intractable enemy. Great. There's another 30 of them out there. You're not going to build this temple until you have established a kingdom that spans from the Euphrates to the Nile and that establishes a powerful base, powerhouse of greatness in the land of Israel.
Rabbi?
That's what's coming down the pipeline next to Prakim. Yes.
Actually, what does any of that have to do with the Beit HaMikdash? I mean, it's like Hashem says even in the beginning of this, you know, he's been living in this, in the tent, and it's fine, and he never asked for a house. But why does he have to have an empire in order to have a house?
That is an excellent question. The answer to that question is the third variable in this nevuah. Okay? That's exactly where we're going next.
So, Rabbi, I still want to bring up Moshe.
Mm-hmm.
I feel like Moshe was sincere in his desire to enter the land of Israel. From a spiritual point of view, he wanted to see the promised land. I feel David was sincere in him wanting to build the Beit HaMikdash, also from a spiritual point of view. And God's telling him, no, you haven't finished fighting your wars. But I feel as a spiritual person, that wasn't the motivator for David. David wanted to build the Beit HaMikdash, and Moshe wanted to enter the promised land, but we don't always get our dreams. And there are other things we have to fulfill, but still, I could understand.
Janet, I couldn't agree with you more. I'm 1,000% correct. David would have liked nothing more than to hang up his bow and arrow at right now and build this temple and stay in it the rest of his life. How do I know that?
Tehillim.
Because he says so. Shifti bevet Hashem. That's all he wanted, ever wanted to do, was to sit in the built in the mikdash that he built. That is all David ever wanted to do. That's that parak in Kuf Lamed Bet that I showed you earlier, of where he takes an oath that he'll never sleep until he builds this mikdash. And there it's also about finding the place for the mikdash, but nonetheless, it's the same message. David wants nothing more than to build that mikdash and stay in it. You think David wants to be the great warrior? He wants to fight the greatest world war the civilization has ever seen up until that point in history? And it's definitely not on his bucket list.
Right. The piece that when you say you're not ready until you establish a greater empire.
Right.
But the next sentence is, you will never be ready. Shlomo will do it.
Correct.
So that until doesn't work.
So there's more variables here. It's not just about until. It's about putting all the variables together. So variable number one is, I need you to have a stable, you to have a greatness and a malchus and a presence across the region. Number two, I need a time of peace that's not just because you fought that war and established that empire, but a generation that grows into that generation, that piece of time of peace and tranquility. I need part one and I need part two. So I need Psukim Chetet and I need to move that into Psukim Yud Aleph. 1000%. But we're not done. We're not done. Because, come back to Jan's question earlier, why does the establishment of a regional superpower become a prerequisite for the building of the Mikdash? And for that, we need the third variable in this nevuah. And probably the most surprising of them all. So come back to the message. Again, Psukim Vav Zayin is a setup. Right? You're not going to build this temple for me because I did not ask for a temple for all the days that I traveled and the leaders of Israel were shoftim for all of those years. That the leader of Israel was a shofet, I never once asked to build a temple. And now that I took you out of from the sheepfold and I made you my prince of Israel and I made you the king, I will make you an empire. And I will establish peace in the land and a generation that will grow into that peace. And now we come to the punchline. And now I tell you that God will make for you a house. Your days will be fulfilled. You will sleep with your fathers. I will set upon your throne a seed that who shall come after you. I will build as a kingdom. Who yivne bayit lishmi, he shall build this house for me. I will be for him a father. He will be for me like son. I may punish him if he sins, but I will not remove him from the throne. Your kingdom, your house shall be established for all eternity. Here's an interesting exercise. If you look at the whole parak, okay, hard to see in this kind of a chart or web page where you're looking at psukim by psukim. So let me do this. Let's take a look at the whole parak. This is a really interesting website. I like this website for many reasons, but one of them is the power it has to do this. Hang on a second. I need to get the pictures out of my way. Okay, this is a entire parak. This is the entire parak from Pasuk Aleph through Pasuk Yud Zayin. This website has what's called a kind of an engine, Ma'abadat Tanakh, can work through all kinds of interesting words. If I were to say to you, go through this parak and find the most significant word that appears more often than any other. The prepositions in Hebrew appear a lot, right? So in this whole section from Pasuk Aleph to Pasuk Yud Zayin, this tells you the frequency of words and how that appear in this parak. So for example, the word olam appears 3 times, and it'll highlight the word for you. The word aseh appears 3 times, and it'll highlight where it is. Okay, prepositions, they appear a lot, but they're just prepositions, they're insignificant. But the most significant word that appears more often than any other, it just tells you the frequency, is this word here. The word bayit. Word bayit appears in this parak eight times. More than any other key word in this parak. Which tells me, no surprise, right? What's the theme of the parak? Building of the Beit HaMikdash, the house of God, correct? Except that if you look at the use of the word, the application of the word bayit carefully, you will see that the same word is used to describe 2 different things. Vayiki yeshev ha-melech beveito is referring to the palace of the king. I'm sitting in a house, a palace made of cedar. And therefore, I would like to build a temple, a bayit for God. God's response, Komar Hashem, Atati vleli bayit l'shifti, you're going to build for me a house. Kilo yeshabti l'bayit l'miyom aloti. Lama lo b'nitem li bayit. I never asked anybody why they didn't build a bayit. Your son, who you've never bayit l'shmi. But look at this phrase. V'yigid lecha Hashem, God instructs you or tells you, informs you, ki bayit ya'aseh lecha Hashem, that God is going to build for you a bayit. Now, last I checked, David already has a bayit. Why does David already have a bayit?
But does it mean a dynasty in this context?
Oh, wait, we're getting there. Hang on a second, right? Last I checked, David already has a bayit because he says that's right, how the parak starts. Enochi yoshev bebeit arazim. He's sitting in a palace. This word bayit here does not mean house. Right? It's not a physical house. It's a house in terms of household. Right? Bayit yaseh lecha Hashem. Meaning, kiyim l'uyamecha v'shechavtat avotecha v'akimoti et za'acha acharecha sheyetzei mimeyecha v'achinoti et mamlachto. I will establish for you a seed, an heir to the throne, somebody who will come from you, who will sit on your throne.
It's a dynasty.
Right? Second generation ben achar ben, second generation king. Dynasty. Ki bayit yaseh lecha Hashem. Who, this child, this bayit for you, yivne bayit lishmi, will build a bayit for me. I will establish his throne, I will establish it for eternity, I will be his father, he will be like a son, I won't remove it from the kingdom. And now for the second time, v'ne'eman beitcha u'mamlachtecha, your dynasty, your kingdom, shall be established ad olam. David wanted to build a Beit HaMikdash. You know what the synonym for Beit HaMikdash is? Beit Olamim, the house of eternity. And God's response to him is, I will build you a Beit Olamim, a house of eternity. David wanted to build a temple, a mikdash. God said, it's not a mikdash that we need. It's a malchus. It's a shalshelet. It's a dynasty of melech. Fundamentally, what's the difference between a shofet and a melech? How does this parak begin? Our parak begins with a description of how God did not ask any of the shoftim who led Israel to build a temple. This should be equivalent of Shoftei Israel. Any of the Shoftim of Israel who I commanded to leave my people, did I ever command them to build me a bayit? Because Israel was led by Shoftim. What's the difference between Shofet and a Melech? Right. Think about the answer. God, David says, I want to build a bayit for you. And God's answer is, great, but first I have to build a bayit for you. And we're not talking about a physical bayit made out of cedar. We're talking about a dynasty in the shalshelet and a child and an heir to sit on your throne. And until an heir sits on your throne, I can't have the king build a temple for me. It's got to be built by an heir. It's got to be built by a shalshelet. It has to be built by a bayit. Why? So we talked about political, military stability, and we talked about personal stability in David's life. When we talked about political stability, I need a dynasty that can go on for generations. So on the one hand, it's a very simple message. Come back to my question. What's the difference between a melech and a shofet? Let's deal with that. I don't think we've ever really hit this one head on. Fundamentally, what's the job?
Shoftim didn't didn't establish a line.
Correct. Correct. There's actually two differences between them. We're going to come to them in a second, and they're connected. But the obvious one is that a shofet was a regional appointment and a temporary appointment. The whole theme of Sefer Shoftim was that they were designated or self-appointed or appointed by God or appointed by the people, whatever the circumstances were, but they rose to power at the moment. They led the people through a crisis, and then they led the people after the crisis, and that was it. Right? They were regional. They were temporary. And you can't have a regional and a temporary power establish the Beit HaMikdash. Fundamental difference between a melech and a shofet is that a shofet is regional and a melech is national. One leader for all of Israel. But the other difference is, and Tzvi is correct, is that a shofet by definition is a single appointment. May have led Israel for 40 years and a whole generation. May have led Israel for 7 years or 3 years or whatever the circumstances are. Each shofet was different, but they were local and they were temporary. A melech, by definition, is national, represents the people. And if it represents the people, it has to represent the eternity, the stability of that people. That's why a stability of a malchus from a Torah perspective is so critical. Because if the malchus represents the people of Israel, then the same way the people are eternal and the people are stable and the people go on from generation to generation, and the leadership, the malchus, has to continue from generation to generation. If you think about it in terms of modern government for a second, right? We have the same principle. The only difference is that our dynasty is defined in a different format, but we have the same principle. It's the format of government that continues from generation to generation. We choose to a mechanism by who becomes the heir to the throne in a slightly different fashion than the dynasties of a malchus. But we're still establishing one government that continues from generation to generation because the government represents the people. It's the stability of the nation and the stability of the government that are inherently interconnected.
Okay,
Rabbi,
now I have a question.
Yeah.
Hashem didn't want a king. He was actually insulted when the people asked for a king.
Yeah, not according to the way we learned Sefer Shmuel Aleph, but that's a kind of throwback to an earlier discussion. It's not, there's a mitzvah to appoint a king. It's a mitzvah in the Torah to appoint a king. What went wrong in Perek in Shmuel Aleph is a whole discussion, but there's clearly a mitzvah to appoint a king. And again, it's there's a very famous Netziv who says, and I've quoted it often, the form of government that the Torah chooses is irrelevant. The form of government is irrelevant. Remember, in the world of Tanakh, there is no such thing as representative government. It doesn't exist. It's not invented yet. Right? There are only two forms of government that exist in the time of Tanakh. And they are?
Kingship.
And?
Judges.
Tribalism.
Military leaders.
No. A judge is a tribal leader.
Okay.
The job description of a judge and the job description of a melech is identical. They're both military leaders, and they're both political leaders, and they're both judicial leaders. That's the job description of a melech and the job description of a shofet is identical. The only difference between them is that a shofet is regional and the power is represented in the shofet himself. A melech is national and his power is a representation of the people. It's about the nation that he represents, the flag that he carries, which is why continuity is so critical, because it's not about whether it's a dynasty ben achaben, it's about whether the continuity of the kingdom, of the malchus, of the people representation continues from generation to generation. The Netziv is an extraordinary comment where he says that in the time once the malchus ends, the powers of the malchus return to the people, and the people can appoint and elect a group, an individual or a group, who represent the same authorities and powers of the king. And his whole description of the process of democracy, he says, is identical to the Torah's concept of malchus. Identical. Because all the Torah established in establishing a malchus was not that a king in the sense of the absolute power of the king that all the, right, that we perceive is in today's world, we hear the word king and we have a visceral reaction. The concept of a melech was that it was a national leadership institution that would represent the people from generation to generation, however you appoint it, however you create the mechanism for that dynasty to continue. Right? We pledge allegiance to the flag of the United States of America. It doesn't matter who the president is. The Canadians amongst us, I apologize. Right? Because it's the institution of government that continues from generation to generation. We've just created a different mechanism for how that dynasty gets played out. But the dynasty is the same. And that's what God says to David, that you are the first melech in Israel. Shaul didn't count because, right, why didn't Shaul count? Shaul didn't count. Why not?
No dynasty, no children left.
No dynasty, no children, and he was removed from the throne. Kasher hasirot im Shaul. So essentially, Shaul was demoted from the position, and he was also regional and not national, because he spent half his time chasing David and creating a civil war between the north and the south. He was by definition demoted to the position of a shofet, and so for all intents and purposes, David becomes the first melech. But you can't become the first melech until you have an heir to the throne, until you have a dynasty, until you have continuity. And ultimately, that was what God said to David. We need continuity and stability and peace. We need continuity and stability in the kingdom and the reputation of Israel. And we need continuity and stability in the shalshalat and the dynasty to represent. This isn't just a moment. This isn't just a leader, a powerful leader, a warrior leader. No, this is Malchut Yisrael. The Mikdash can be built only by Malchut Yisrael, not the Melech, but the Malchut. It's not the king who builds the temple. It's the kingdom who builds the temple of God. And therefore, it needs a second generation. So God says to David, not now, I can't do it yet. Why? As great as you are, and you will be even greater. You are going to conquer the world in this, in that regard. But you are still generation one. And I can't build the temple until we reach generation two. Now, what I've not answered is Jan's question. But at least now we have a segue to it, which is, why? What is it about the temple that requires it to be built by Malchut Yisrael? We've established that David is not a melech until he puts an heir on the throne. We've established that the time is not a time of peace and tranquility until we finished until we enter the next generation. We've established that we need an empire, not just a regional power, but not just a local power, but a regional superpower, a name, a nation amongst the nations. But what is it about the Mikdash that made it so core that it could only be built by a Melech ben Melech, Yoresh Etzer, an heir to the throne, second generation, a kingdom of Israel? Not just a leader, as powerful and as charismatic as he was, that requires an understanding of the nature of the Beit HaMikdash itself. What is it about the Beit HaMikdash that made it so that it could only be built by a melech, a true king of Israel? That is our next piece. So that, Bezrat Hashem, we will explore next week.
Thanks, Rabbi.
Okay.
Thank you.
Bye. Thank you, Rabbi.
Thank you.
Thank you. Bye. Thank you.